Okay, let's unpack this. Here's something that might just shift how you think about treating serious depression. Imagine an anesthetic drug, something that's been, well, a quiet workhorse in operating rooms for about 50 years,
okay,
is now showing surprisingly rapid, really significant effects on even the most severe forms of depression.
Wow.
It almost feels like science fiction, doesn't it?
It really does. And what's fascinating here is this unexpected pivot, you know, for a well-established drug, ketamine, primarily known for anesthesia.
Right.
Has suddenly revealed this potential in mental health. It's generating, well, considerable excitement and research now.
Exactly. And that's the precise territory we're exploring in this deep dive. We're going to delve into the compelling evidence around ketamine.
A potential game changer.
Right. Especially for those who haven't found relief through the more traditional routes.
I'm grounding this in solid work.
Yes. Our guy here is an article by Dr. Chittaranjan Andrade, published in the Journal of Clinical Psychiatry. He's a highly respected figure in clinical psychopharmacology.
Dr. Andrade's work gives us a really valuable framework. His understanding of how these meds work, it's deep. He carefully breaks down what we know about ketamine's effectiveness, the side effects, which are important to consider, and the still somewhat mysterious ways it might actually be working.
So our mission today is to really get under the skin of these key areas. We want to give you a clear, insightful picture of what the current science is revealing.
And promise the challenges.
Exactly. And the big questions that are still out there. It's vital to keep in mind, though.
Oh, absolutely.
This conversation is about understanding the research. It's not medical advice.
No, definitely not. It's about synthesizing the info, putting it in context.
Right.
And highlighting not just what we know, but maybe more importantly, where the knowledge gaps still are. It's evolving.
Okay. Now, to really grasp why ketamine is causing such a stir, maybe we should quickly look back at the history of treating depression.
Good idea. It gives context. We're talking a timeline stretching way back to the 1950s.
Yeah.
If you think about the bigger picture, iproniazid, imipramine, they were real turning points back then.
The start of the modern era, really?
Pretty much. They paved the way for the TCAs, the MAOIs.
Uh-huh.
And then the ones people might know better today, like SSRIs, SNRIs, NRIs.
And you'd think, okay, decades of development, so many different options,
right.
We'd have treatment pretty sorted out, right?
You would think so. But as Dr. Andrade points out, it's surprising.
What is?
Despite all the variety in how these drugs work, there's often not a huge difference in their overall effectiveness for many people.
Really?
Yeah. There's maybe a slight edge for some dual-action drugs, perhaps, but the overall improvement across the board, it isn't as dramatic as you might hope after all this time. That limited difference, it really raises questions, doesn't it, about the fundamental challenges.
Yeah.
Achieving sustained remission, like complete disappearance of symptoms, it can be really tough for a lot of individuals.
And there was that big trial, START.
Right, the START trial. It vividly showed how the chance of remission often drops, sometimes quite sharply, with each new antidepressant someone tries.
That's rough. What were the numbers again?
Around 28% remission with the first medication tried.
Okay.
But dropping down to maybe 10% by the fourth attempt.
Wow, only 10%. That really underscores the need for something, well, completely different.
Exactly. Particularly for people with what we call treatment-resistant depression.
People who've tried multiple standard drugs without success.
Precisely. That stark drop in remission rates in STARD, it's not just a statistic. It really challenges the one-size-fits-all idea.
Yeah.
And it highlights why we urgently need treatments that work differently, which is exactly where the excitement around ketamine comes in.
Right.
The hope is maybe like clozapine was for some with schizophrenia.
A breakthrough for non-responders.
Potentially. Maybe ketamine could be that for some with severe treatment-resistant depression. But, and it's a big but.
Uh-huh.
As Dr. Andrade rightly stresses, ketamine is still a long way from earning that clozapine for depression title. It's very much still being investigated.
Still, the fact it's even in that conversation says a lot. Now, before we dive deeper into the antidepressant effects, let's remember, ketamine isn't new, is it? It has a history.
Oh, absolutely. It was first introduced as an anesthetic about 50 years ago.
50 years.
Yeah. Its main role was inducing and maintaining anesthesia, especially when keeping breathing going. Could be tricky.
Okay, so a solid track record in medicine, and then people started noticing other things at lower doses.
Exactly. That's what's fascinating. The list of off-label uses for these sub-anesthetic doses started growing.
Like what?
Things like managing acute pain in the ER, helping with post-op pain, treating really stubborn refractory headaches.
Who wants nothing else touches?
Right, and even helping to reduce agitation, sometimes violence, in emergency settings. Plus, it's used for pediatric sedation, too.
That's quite a range.
Yeah.
From knocking someone out completely to calming agitation or lifting depression, it's almost counterintuitive.
It is a bit like discovering a tool you use for one job has a totally different, maybe equally valuable purpose.
Good analogy.
And that surprising discovery of its rapid antidepressant effect.
Yeah.
It really came out of these explorations at much lower doses.
Okay, so let's get to the core of it then. Ketamine for depression. What's the actual evidence on effectiveness?
Well, the initial findings were pretty remarkable, actually. Mm. Early studies, like Berman back in 2000 and then Zariety in 2006,
mm-hmm.
they gave us the first really solid evidence, intravenous ketamine, 0.5 milligrams per kilogram.
What did they find?
Rapid effects. What was really striking was the speed. Significant improvement, often within hours.
Hours, not the weeks you normally wait for antidepressants.
Exactly, hours versus weeks. And the benefits could last for several days.
That's just a monumental difference. Imagine the relief for someone severely depressed. And these studies, they focused on people who weren't responding well already.
Precisely. Zariety's study specifically looked at patients with major depressive disorder that was resistant to multiple treatments.
Mm.
They found impressive response and remission rates just one day after a single ketamine infusion.
One day. Wow.
Now, the effect did tend to wear off over the next week or so, but it stayed significantly better than the placebo group.
Okay, so not just isolated findings then. Has more research backed this up?
Oh, definitely. There was a big meta-analysis, Kishimoto and colleagues in 2016. They pooled data from 9 randomized controlled trials.
Okay.
Over 200 patients, and the results were consistent. Ketamine led to a significantly greater drop in depression symptoms compared to controls.
And how fast did they say it started working?
Often as early as 40 minutes after the infusion started.
40 minutes?
Yeah. Peak effect usually around day one. And the benefit typically lasted somewhere between, say, 3 and 12 days.
So incredibly fast acting, but maybe shorter lived than traditional daily meds.
That's a crucial distinction, yeah. The meta-analysis showed higher response and remission rates with ketamine in the short term, especially that first week.
Right.
There's also some hint that the effect might be dose-related, at least in that lower 0.1 to 0.5 mg/kg range.
Meaning higher doses might work better for some?
Possibly.
Yeah.
Or maybe exploring slightly higher doses could be an option for people who don't respond initially, but that needs more study.
Makes sense. Finding the right dose is often key. And Dr. Andrade notes most data is on major depression, but some studies included bipolar depression too.
Yes. The main focus so far has been major depressive disorder, but the potential for bipolar depression is definitely an active area of research too.
Okay. Now, another really critical issue in depression is suicide risk. What does the research say about ketamine's impact there?
That's a really important area. And encouragingly, both open-label studies and RCTs suggest ketamine can reduce measures of suicidality.
In treatment-resistant depression specifically.
Yes. This rapid decrease in suicidal thoughts is a particularly significant finding given how urgent these situations can be.
That could be genuinely life-saving. But, like the mood effect, this benefit might also fade within about a week.
That seems to be the case. It's the important caveat. And it raises a key question.
Which
is ketamine having a specific anti-suicidal effect? Or is the reduction in suicidal thoughts just a consequence of the overall mood lifting?
I see. Like a knock-on effect.
Exactly. The research is still trying to sort that out, disentangling those possibilities.
That distinction feels really important. If it is a direct effect, that has huge implications for crisis intervention. Now, what about using ketamine with other antidepressants? Augmentation.
Yeah, Dr. Andrade discusses that. There's some promising research there. A study by Hu and colleagues, for example.
What did they find?
They added a single IV dose of ketamine to ongoing treatment with escitalopram, an SSRI.
Okay.
And it significantly improved outcomes for patients with severe major depression. Higher response, higher remission rates. And faster improvement compared to the group that got escitalopram plus a placebo infusion.
That's really interesting, using ketamine to sort of kickstart or boost a standard antidepressant.
It is, but it seems not all combinations work the same way.
Oh.
Well, another meta-analysis looked at using ketamine anesthesia during ECT, electroconvulsive therapy.
Right.
And that actually found no significant improvement in antidepressant outcomes compared to using a different anesthetic for the ECT.
Hmm. So the context, the way it's used, really matters.
It seems critical, yes.
Yeah.
It's clearly not a simple, straightforward application in every scenario.
Okay, so we've covered the potential benefits. We absolutely need to talk about the potential downsides, adverse effects.
Right. Very important. At the subanesthetic doses used for depression, the most common side effects are transient neuropsychiatric symptoms.
Meaning?
Things like dissociative feelings, feeling detached from your body or surroundings, mm-hmm. maybe some cognitive fuzziness, and sometimes what are called psychomimetic effects, mild hallucinations, altered perceptions, also drowsiness, dizziness, maybe poor coordination, blurred vision, just feeling a bit strange or unreal.
That sounds like it could be quite unsettling for someone.
It could be. But Dr. Andrade indicates, and a meta-analysis supports this, these effects are usually mild and crucially temporary.
They don't last long?
Generally, no. They tend to peak in the first couple of hours and wear off.
Oh.
That meta-analysis we mentioned.
Yeah.
It found that while these effects were more common with ketamine than placebo, they weren't usually seen as clinically significant. And importantly, people weren't dropping out of treatment because of them any more often than in the placebo groups.
Okay, that's definitely reassuring. What about physical side effects, like blood pressure, heart rate? Anesthetics often affect those.
Good point. Yes, transient increases in blood pressure, both systolic and diastolic, and heart rate can happen after a ketamine infusion.
Noticeable.
In one analysis, yeah, a notable percentage of patients had temporary readings above certain clinical thresholds. But again, these hemodynamic changes are generally short-lived. They tend to go back to baseline fairly quickly.
So similar to the psychological effects, monitor them, but usually not a reason to stop treatment.
Pretty much. Dr. Andrade emphasizes they're typically dose dependent. They peak early, within the first couple of hours usually,
yeah.
and resolve within maybe 4 to 24 hours.
Right.
And importantly, at that standard 0.5 mg/kg dose, patients stay conscious, their oxygen levels are fine, no significant breathing problems.
That's a really crucial point. Staying conscious, breathing normally, it's very different from the image of general anesthesia.
Absolutely.
Were there any other really significant adverse events reported?
Dr. Andrade mentions one single reported case of a manic switch. In a patient with treatment-resistant depression who hadn't previously been diagnosed with bipolar disorder.
So that highlights the need for careful screening.
Definitely. Thorough psychiatric evaluation, careful patient selection are key.
Mm.
But overall, patients in trials generally found IV ketamine acceptable. There's even some suggestions side effects might lessen with repeated maintenance doses over time.
Okay. And what about the potential for, you know, misuse or abuse? Ketamine has that reputation.
It's a valid concern, needs addressing. Ketamine does have misuse potential, and chronic high-dose abuse is linked to problems like bladder issues, cystitis.
Right.
But importantly, there haven't been reports of those kinds of problems emerging from the intermittent low-dose use for depression under strict medical supervision.
So the clinical setting is key.
Absolutely crucial. Controlled administration is vital.
Okay, so we know the effects can be rapid, but they tend to fade. What about making the benefits last longer? What strategies are being looked at?
Well, for people who don't respond much initially, say after one or a few sessions,
yeah.
some small studies suggest maybe continuing for up to 6 sessions, or perhaps cautiously trying a slightly higher dose might help.
Yeah.
But if someone doesn't respond after a reasonable number of tries, it might just mean ketamine isn't the right treatment for them.
Fair enough. And for those who do respond well initially, how do you stop the depression coming back? Relapse prevention.
Right, because the effect typically lasts, what, a week or two on average?
Yeah.
Maintenance strategies are really crucial. Researchers have looked at repeated dosing.
How often? And how?
Various routes, intranasal sprays, subcutaneous or intramuscular injections, IV infusions, at intervals ranging from maybe every couple of days to once a week.
And does that work?
Case reports, uncontrolled trials, and some controlled trials suggest this kind of approach can sustain the benefits for months, maybe even years in some people.
That's encouraging for long-term management. Now, back to side effects for a sec. Are there ways to manage them if they do become a problem?
Yeah, as Dr. Andrade notes, usually the neuropsychiatric and cardiovascular effects aren't clinically significant or long-lasting.
But if they are troublesome?
Symptomatic treatment usually works fine. Like if blood pressure spikes temporarily, short-acting antihypertensives can be used. Some research looked at clonidine maybe as a preventative for the cardiovascular effects.
And what about those more unusual psychological effects? the dissociation, feeling unreal, any ways to minimize those?
People are definitely looking into that. Strategies like trying lower doses, maybe infusing the drug more slowly over a longer time, exploring different forms of the molecule like esketamine, or even giving other psychotropic meds alongside it.
Does that work?
It's still a bit uncertain, actually. The worry is, can you reduce those side effects without also reducing the antidepressant benefit? It's a balancing act.
Tricky.
Interestingly, though, the intranasal route might be better tolerated for some people compared to IV.
Okay, so still lots of work happening to fine-tune the delivery and minimize issues. Now, maybe the biggest mystery, how does it actually work? The mechanism seems so different.
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it? It's a key point. We know a lot about the biological effects ketamine has, much like we do for ECT.
Right.
But the precise sequence, the specific mechanism that flips the switch on depression, that's still somewhat elusive.
Why is that so hard to pin down?
Well, partly because our basic understanding of depression's neurobiology is still incomplete, too.
So it's like we see the result, but the exact steps happening in the black box of the brain are still fuzzy.
That's a pretty good way to put it.
Yeah.
We know ketamine is an NMDA receptor antagonist. It blocks those specific receptors.
Okay.
But that alone probably isn't the whole story. Other drugs block NMDA receptors too, and they don't seem to have the same powerful antidepressant effects.
So NMDA blockage is just one piece of the puzzle. What else might be going on?
The leading idea right now is that at these low subanesthetic doses, ketamine might actually, perhaps indirectly, increase the activity of another key neurotransmitter system, glutamate.
Increase it. How?
Through something called glutamatergic facilitation. And there's also evidence it might boost AMPA receptors, another glutamate receptor type.
Okay.
And activate downstream pathways involved in neuroplasticity.
Neuroplasticity, the brain's ability to rewire itself.
Exactly. So think of it less like just blocking something and more like flicking a switch that sets off a cascade, maybe causing the brain to release more glutamate, which then triggers beneficial changes, helps circuits adapt.
So potentially helping to rewire brain circuits affected by depression.
That's a simplified version of the leading hypothesis, yeah. But the exact molecular chain reaction, the critical pathways, still under intense investigation.
Fascinating. So we see the results, but the why is still a major research area. Given all this, then, what's the current take? Where does ketamine stand now, and what's the outlook?
Well, Dr. Andrade puts it well. The enthusiasm for ketamine, in many ways, has kind of outpaced the definitive long-term evidence.
The hype got ahead of the data a bit.
Perhaps. There's a lot of promising research, absolutely. But currently, none of it quite meets the really strict standards needed for broad regulatory approval, specifically for treating depression.
Right. We need those larger, longer-term studies to really confirm things.
Exactly. And the American Psychiatric Association put out a consensus statement emphasizing caution.
What do they stress?
Things like very careful patient selection, thorough evaluation, getting truly informed consent, ensuring clinicians are properly trained.
Makes sense.
Having the right treatment setting, being precise with dosing and delivery, close follow-up, safety monitoring, and thinking carefully about maintenance. It's about a responsible, cautious approach.
So excitement and hope, yes, but tempered with a strong dose of caution and the need for proper safeguards.
Precisely. But there is a significant amount of clinical research ongoing, including studies funded by pharma companies designed specifically to answer these remaining questions.
We might get more clarity soon.
The hope in the field is definitely that, yes. In the coming years, we should get a much clearer picture of ketamine's role and maybe see ketamine or perhaps related drugs with better profiles get formal approval.
And you mentioned Dr. Andrade has another article coming.
Yes, he mentions his next piece will dive into more specifics, like which form of ketamine the enantiomers might be best, optimal dosing, different routes of administration, drug interactions, which patients might benefit most.
So lots more detail to come. It really does sound like a rapidly evolving field.
Absolutely. The ongoing research, these future publications,
yeah,
they'll be crucial in shaping how we understand and ultimately use ketamine for depression.
Well, this has been a truly fascinating deep dive, really illuminating. The key takeaway seems to be ketamine shows significant promise, especially for treatment-resistant depression, and it works fast.
Huge promise, rapid action.
But there's still a lot we need to understand. The exact mechanisms, how best to use it for individuals, long-term safety, making the effects last.
That sums it up perfectly. It's a field brimming with potential, offering real hope. But it absolutely requires ongoing rigorous science and very careful clinical practice. Understanding the current evidence, what we've discussed, is essential for anyone following mental health treatment developments.
Definitely. And on that note, here's maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to chew on. Given ketamine works so incredibly fast, hours versus the weeks for traditional drugs, what might that tell us about the fundamental biology of depression itself?
Interesting question.
And what could having such a fast-acting treatment mean for the future of psychopharmacology? It raises some pretty profound questions about how we approach treatment, doesn't it?